gold finger. He's the man with the Midas touch. A spider's touch.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
By the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
And they're sometimes joined by guests like...
This is Dr. Wonders.
I had to stop her from screaming.
And Diane.
If you men only knew.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1964 007 classic Goldfinger.
Yeah, we are.
But first, housekeeping. We'll go around the horn starting with Jason. Any housekeeping?
Not aware of any housekeeping. I did listen to Memento while I was in Hammond, Oregon at my reunion, so that was fun.
Any thoughts, any notes?
I just was lost in enjoying it, so not really. Everybody who attended the reunion received a mug from the show, and I do have two spare mugs right now. So if you're listening and you would like a mug, you'll have to email us, and we might get you one.
Well, let's make it more specific. Let's give out one mug this week. If anybody either, I guess the first person leaves a message on the hotline, and that phone number is 425-something-something-something-something-something-something.
Come on. It's on the mugs.
Well, I don't have the mug in front of me. You read it then.
I can't read it. It's dark in here.
By the way, just peeling back the curtain for a second, Drew is deathly ill right now. He is calling from his sick bed.
I had to get special permission from my physician. He said it's okay, just don't get me too riled up.
Okay. No, we'll try not to get you too agitated. So the hotline is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169.
Yeah. Or you can email us at show@notinacreepyway.com. That's show@notinacreepyway.com. And so the first quality piece of feedback from this episode that mentions... wanting a mug. We will send you a mug.
Within the United States, maybe?
Yeah, I guess yes. Yes. That's going to have to be it, because otherwise postage might get a little touchy.
Could be.
Yeah, we'll see, though. So
Canada would be okay.
Yeah, probably the UK would be okay, although you wouldn't get your mug for like 6 months or 8 fortnights or a liter or whatever it is.
I also listened to Memento, and I thought you did a really good job editing. I don't normally notice. I thought you did a good job with the pauses. You didn't take out too many, and I was also aware of some of the longer non podcast appropriate tangents that we went on, and you cut those out very seamlessly.
Oh, thank you.
I thought job well done. Yeah, but the only other bit of housekeeping I had was. I did something pretty incredible for the phase of life I'm in. I went to the theater and I saw Star Wars.
And how did you enjoy it?
I loved it. I was so happy that like I was getting emotional at various points, like just happy. It was so great.
You have emotions?
Couple.
Good for you.
So is it something so good that I should go to it by myself? Unlike after I drop Journey off at school, find a early time and go to see the movies?
Yes. I mean, I don't know what your relationship is with Star Wars, but I love the Star Wars movies. It's some of the most important movies of my childhood. and the prequels didn't really capture that essence, although I don't hate them as much as a lot of other people do. But this movie, I thought was just fantastic from start to finish. I loved it.
Excellent. Well, I will definitely have to see it. It's just, again, it's a time thing. Because I can, the alternative is also to go home and take a nap.
Yeah, no, I understand it. This was a culmination of 2 solid weeks of planning.
So have you not seen this yet, Jason?
No.
Okay, so, Well, it'll be interesting. I'm not sure. And there are some other movies that if I'm going to go to the movies, maybe I'd, although maybe I guess Star Wars would be important to see in the theater because it's big.
I saw it at Takatnu, the 3D IMAX, and it was good.
It'd be interesting to hear what I think the parents went and saw it, so.
Oh, yeah. No, they enjoyed it.
I'd be interested to see what they have to say.
Maybe one or both of them can leave us a message telling us what they thought about it.
I don't think we'll get both.
Oh, if both of them leave a message on the voicemail from inside a locked car. Well, it doesn't have to be locked, I suppose, but just a car that's not running with the doors closed makes for a great little sound booth momentarily. Mother Anderson did a great job of the comment that she made last time.
Indeed.
Yeah. Except that, of course, she hates being called Mother Anderson.
By the way, how was the reunion? Did it go well?
It did. I think we were all very nervous, having not seen each other and certainly not having been together under one roof in probably 25 years. And then we're going to be locked in a house for basically 4 days together. So we were all pretty, well, I shouldn't say we all. I was very apprehensive and nervous just from the social anxiety standpoint. So Dee came in first. Well, I shouldn't say that. Dee came in to Portland and I let her stay at my house Thursday night, and we drove down Friday morning. So it was kind of a nice reacquainting. So she and I could hang out, and we went and had dinner and just kind of got some grocery shopping done. And then Friday morning, we packed up the rental car and, the rental expedition and went down, made our way down to the coast, picked Jerry up on the way. So Jerry and Dee and I kind of carpooled the big giant beast and made it down. And so that was, it was nice to have a while to decompress. It was a very nice area. There were elk and deer around the property. It rained most of the time, but that was kind of nice because it made it kind of a very kind of wintry setting. So it's what I would expect. It's what I enjoy when I'm vacationing on the coast. I like the rain. I like the storms. Everybody was really, we got along, we all picked up where we left off, so it was kind of nice in that respect. It was, it's difficult to leave after you've been reacquainting, but, it was a good experience, and we really have Debbie to thank for it. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to join us, so that was kind of the bittersweet part, but we all agreed that we will do it again in the near future. In the next 3 to 5 years, we will get together again. All of us in one capacity or another. And in the interim, I think we will probably visit each other more individually, certainly more often than we have. So that was good.
So it makes me think of, the Big Chill, where the group of friends gets together for Kevin Costner's
death? Yeah, I very, very early on in this, I said, if anybody plays a Whiter Shade of Pale, I will kill them. So
that's just where I was going.
Yeah, no, I very much didn't want that to be this experience, but it's a nice little town. It was a cozy little house. There was plenty of room. It wasn't far from civilization. It was 10 minutes to the Fred Meyer. So, but it was also, a walk to the beach. We could walk to the beach. So it was, it was really nice.
Right on.
And I drank a whole lot and smoked some cigars. So. And shared my cigars.
Oh, what? This is a good conclusion. What kind of cigars? I know I'm the only one interested.
So I have a barrel-aged Nicaraguan Tabacalera.
Oh, I've never tried it, but the ring is beautiful.
So it was actually quite good. I shared this with Bree. I shared this with Brady and Erica the first night because I needed some time to be outside drinking and decompressing. And then I have a Perdomo 50 champagne.
You went for the expensive stuff.
Well, I can only do it twice a year, so. And I, you know, I never knew, you know, I haven't seen my friends in a long time, and I figured if we were going to share, there was no sense in skimping.
Excellent. Well, thank you for indulging me and letting me live vicariously through you.
I'm happy to share, and next time I'm in Anchorage.
We should totally smoke at Mom and Dad's house.
On the new deck. So, no, it was a very good experience. I'm glad we went. I'm glad we all managed to get together. There wasn't any trauma. We all have very strong personalities. It's clear that we don't agree on everything.
I should hope not.
We did manage to have a civil game of Cards Against Humanity, so.
Oh, I, while I'm thinking about it, because I will forget otherwise, but I needed to tell a daughter story. As we're getting ready for bed, Journey likes to stall. And so Kelly bathed her, and I'm drying her off in her bedroom and getting her into like a shirt to sleep in and brushing her hair. And she's got these little, like Minecraft figures. And one of them is a wolf or a dog or something.
Yeah. And, it's the dog.
Yeah. And she, there's also when I cleaned her bedroom, when I cleaned her bedroom last time, there was a wooden, I forget what you call it, like a pill or something, that it's what you kind of fit in on a piece of furniture if you have like screws or other joining things, but then you have a hole that you want to fill up, like a little button. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like a little cap.
Yeah. And it looks, it's black, and it looks a little bit like a top hat. So she puts this thing on top of the dog and says, "I'm President Dog. I'm President Dog." And she turns to me and says, "I'm President Dog. You're fired." Which is exactly what I said. I'm like, oh my God, she's Journey Stradamus.
Or she's Trump.
Well, that's the thing. She doesn't know that the leading candidate has that as probably a trademarked catchphrase.
No, maybe she's just starting early with trying to figure out how to really hurt you the most.
Maybe, yeah. Oh no, I find President Trump really amusing. The more Palin access he gets, the more amusing he becomes.
Did you see the Palin hee-haw mashup?
I did not, but I can only imagine.
Are you okay, Drucifer? You're looking pretty shaky.
Yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate your concern.
Well, we can accelerate to movie talk. That's fine. We don't have to dawdle. Goldfinger?
Goldfinger? Yes.
So, Jason, Brother Jay.
Yeah?
You're the, this is your contribution?
This is a terrible movie.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think it's, I mean, it really is iconic. It gives us, it delivers the formula that all other James Bond movies follow.
It does. It doesn't make it any less a terrible movie. It's a pretty terrible movie.
I'm glad to hear you say that because I hated this movie.
Did you hate it because of how Bond acted and all the misogyny and other like misanthropy, actually? Or did you hate it because you thought it was a bad movie?
Both. Yeah, I thought it was a bad movie. I mean, it was dumb. Just it was incredibly, colossally stupid. It made no sense, which I can get over. You know, if the movie like follows its own rules, or if it's even trying to be campy, and I think maybe this was, but it was also completely tonally incoherent. You know, it was kind of campy and silly in some spots, and then young women just get brutally murdered.
It lacked a kind of linear story is the problem. It wasn't very cohesive. And it was almost like three different movies.
Yeah, there were so many points where I had to stop it and go back a couple scenes because I was like, this doesn't make any sense. What is going on?
Yeah.
And we can talk about those when we get there, but yeah, it was just completely incoherent. And I really felt like it had disdain for the audience. That it thought it could get away with what it was getting away with. And I don't know how much of that is, you know, anachronistic. I don't know if it's just the movie's that dated, but yeah, there are some things I couldn't get past. And I actually like silly Bond movies. I like the serious ones, and I like the silly ones too. I mean, I'm not mad at any of the Pierce Brosnan movies, even though they're not great, but they're at least fun. Even Timothy Dalton, I don't mind. This was terrible.
It was a bad movie. It was the seventh book, so it was kind of out of order. It was adapted, of course, so I think the adaptation probably left a lot of the book out. Plus, they had a $3 million budget, and they were kind of at a very rapid-fire pace to try and get these movies out, because they were basically trying to get their goal was they were going to do a Bond movie every 14 months.
Oh, yeah. Well, and the budgets increased. I think the first one was $1 million, the second one was $2 million, and this one was $3 million. And this is, you know, again, the third one. And by the way, they didn't want to pay Sean Connery or any of the other actors any more money for the newer ones than they did for the older ones. So he was already kind of pissed about the money situation. And that's why Felix Leiter was not Jack Lord, because he asked for too much money.
Even the theme song was just a ripoff of Moon River, well, right?
Yes. Yeah, it was Moon River.
I'm crossing you in style someday.
Oh, dreammaker, you heartbreaker.
I thought it was over the top crazy. I thought a lot. See, it's funny because you guys, I didn't have as much disdain for this movie as you guys did. Apparently, I thought it wasn't as good as From Russia with Love, or Dr. No, but I thought it had some interesting parts to it.
It had some good parts. I mean, Odd Job is probably the best part of the whole movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's maybe a little overrated. But he certainly was, he stole every scene he was in a way that Felix Leiter did not.
Right.
My only problem with Odd Job is he looks nothing like a Korean dude.
Well, he's turns out not a Korean dude. He's a Hawaiian dude.
He's also 64, so Hollywood wasn't big on being accurate. But, you know, look at the Academy Awards and not having diversity either, so. Some things are timeless.
I'm not as familiar with Bond movies as you are, but there's a Bond movie. I don't know if it's one you've already covered where, I want to say maybe it's in the cold open where, Sean Connery is dressed like a, I think what he would have referred to as a Chinaman.
We have not
gotten
there yet.
Does that sound familiar?
No, not yet. Yeah. This is actually the first, well, it's not the first cold open, but it's kind of, again, this it's finding its way. This is the template, I think, for all the rest of the Bond movies.
Yeah, and the waterfowl was just dumb.
Well, we're going to get to later movies with different waterfowl problems, but the cold open where Bond swims up and he's got a bird on his head, it just tells you what kind of movie this is. This is an over the top camp movie. And I know that people, like, you know, audiences now think, well, okay, if you're going to go over the top and campy, well, shoot, any of the Austin Powers movies did it better than this. But this is also 1964. This is like a brand new thing.
So You Only Live Twice is what you're referring to.
Okay.
And that's several movies away, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You Only Live Twice is the fifth film.
Okay, so this is the third, then Thunderball, then You Only Live Twice?
I believe so.
Okay.
Yeah, so I, you know, starting out with, you know, the bird on his head is fine. I would be okay if the movie's setting up like, oh, this is what kind of movie we're getting. But it's not. I mean, the first girl is murdered in a very cartoonish way. But she's murdered. And Bond doesn't even really seem to care.
Well, no, and we're not talking about the using the woman as a human shield in the beginning, are you?
No.
Yeah, because she wasn't murdered. She was just probably attacked.
Yeah, no, she just had brain damage. But that's fine. She was a bad guy, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The bad guys get what they get.
Well, but wasn't Jill Masterson working for the bad guys?
But she was helping Bond. She helped Bond.
So she got what she got for treachery, though.
Yeah.
So we don't punish treachery anymore?
No, I'm okay with it. It's just a different movie.
Okay.
It's a completely different tone.
Yeah, it's true. Like I said, I didn't really... I just thought it was like part of the whole spy thing in it. Because, okay, so the plot is the cold open where we have the cold open that has nothing to do with the actual plot. All it does is he goes to Latin America someplace and blows up a drug lab using a big toothpaste tube of C4 and scuba equipment with a bird on his head. And unzips his wetsuit / dry suit, I guess, and he's wearing a white tuxedo and walks into a bar as the drug lab explodes, takes the girl. Turns out the girl is setting him up. He sees the bad guy come at him in the reflection from her eyeballs, which is actually, I think, pretty clever. And then he uses her as a human shield. So there's issues there. But again, yeah, she's a bad guy.
No, I am all good with the movie up to now.
Okay.
Oh, this is a great open. I mean, you had the iconic, you know, getting out of the water, you know, and then unzipping into a tux. You know, it had the debonair guy walking into the bar and being very calm as something behind him explodes.
Yeah, see, that was a different movie than the rest of the movie.
Okay, so when we go to Miami, after, by the way, the big bombastic Shirley Bassey song, which, yeah, is over the top, but I think it's kind of fun. It's cheeky. It's a little on the nose.
Yeah, but when they revisit it in the score, I could only hear Moon River, the entire movie.
Okay, well, so we'll have to do Breakfast at Tiffany's at some point and see if we can get Goldfinger to float in there. Actually, there's some China might talk be a good, there, too.
Yeah, still might be a better... It might work as a palate cleanser.
Okay. Breakfast at Tiffany's was difficult to get through.
Yeah, it is difficult.
I mean, it was... That was... I think, Eric, you and I had this discussion when I tried to listen to Catch 22 and couldn't.
See, I love the movie Catch 22 that I've only seen... You know, I've only seen it recently. But I really like the story, the novella Breakfast at Tiffany's. But the movie is so much different, it kind of took me out of it.
No, I haven't seen either, so...
Yeah, so I really recommend both Catch 22 and the book... Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yeah, see, the book is what I got, which I think was read by Tim Robbins, maybe?
I think so, something like that. I know it was on sale on Audible.
It was fantastic.
Yeah,
it was great. But it was also, it was difficult to listen to, and I felt, I was playing it in my kitchen, and at one point I had to pause it and close the windows.
Oh, yeah, because it is highly offensive to a modern ear.
So,
as is this movie, by the way.
I felt a little dirty. I was like, I need to get some headphones, perhaps. Which is the way I felt about the Murakami book, 1Q84.
Listen to it in the car at stoplights. You have to pause it.
I have to roll up the windows because he is so graphically over-sexual in some of his depictions and descriptions of things in an uncomfortable way. You know, like... Ow, mommy's ear looked like a vagina.
Well, to be fair. Anyway, okay, so back to Goldfinger. So now we go, basically, all the cold open does is get us to the credit sequence and then get us to Miami. Because he flies into Miami on the way back to London. And that's where, turns out, he is staying at the same hotel as Auric Goldfinger, who is a like a bullion dealer and way over the top, like Bond villain. Like, a lot of people really like this guy. I thought, I wouldn't really characterize this as thought experiment, as pretty much Jonah Hill. Or maybe Daryl Hammond.
Daryl Hammond would be amazing. But yeah, he's Auric Goldfinger. Being a criminal who's obsessed with stockpiling gold is fine if a cartoonish villain is the kind of movie you're going for. That's fine. And he's a cheater at cards.
He's a cheater at everything. And it's funny because it seems like in the book, it is Canasta. In the movie, it's Gin Rummy. But it definitely doesn't have... It seems like Gin Rummy, for money, doesn't really have the same weight, the same, as either Baccarat or any of the casino games like poker. And the fact that he's cheating in, like, a way that even in 1964 you should have been able to detect.
Right, yeah, the guy who's losing his money deserved it.
Yeah, most definitely. So, Sean Connery wearing, by the way, an iconic light blue terry cloth jumper, which...
He did look amazing.
Oh, yeah, no, I think Matt Gourley had one commissioned for himself. Matt Gourley and Matt Myra do the James Bonding podcast. And it seems like, and I've listened to a couple other James Bond themed podcasts, and people have wanted this terry cloth jumper for a long time. Now, to me, it looks ridiculous, but then again, you know, I'm not going to go out and buy the Rolex Submariner or try to find an Aston Martin DB5 to fulfill my Bond fantasies, because I don't have that relationship to James Bond. Like, I don't want to ever... I've never had the thought of being James Bond. Makes no sense to me. Yeah, so we learn that Auric, A-U-R-I-C, because we can't get enough of the gold puns and allusions in this movie.
It was subtle as a bunch of scissors.
Yes. Played by Goethe Frobe, whatever his name is, who doesn't speak English very well at all and was dubbed through most of the movie, which I had a little problem with later. But in the beginning, that was fine.
The Bond movies have a long and strong history of overdubbing their actors and actresses.
Yeah, well, and Sean Connery was making, I think, Marnie at the time, so he never left the Pinewood Studios for this movie, so he never went to Miami. So basically, only the guy who played Felix Leiter was actually in Miami. Everybody else is acting in front of projections.
Yeah, you could tell.
Yeah, it wasn't cutting edge. Well, it may have been cutting edge then, but it certainly doesn't hold up now.
Yeah, they. So the DVD extras have an interview of Connery talking about what it's like to be in the third film, and the entire time of the interview, he's on set. He's on the Bond set. And they're, like, hammering and banging construction stuff the whole time in the interview.
So this is, like, a contemporary interview to the movie?
Yeah.
Because I know that's one of the things he hated about this particular movie, was that they didn't pay him enough, in his opinion. And they also allowed the press to have almost nonstop access to him, which is how they got that interview, I'm sure. So he wasn't happy about that either.
Well, because it was clear that the interviewer, like, cornered him to get him to talk for a couple minutes, and then you hear them calling him to set several times, and finally he says, I have to go.
That's, yeah.
But also I think there's probably some animosity because the DB5 got its own tour and its own press, and so it got its own little movie rollout and had its own... its own press package and its own publicity.
Well, Aston Martin didn't necessarily even want to be, like, didn't want to give them the car. They originally wanted them to pay for the cars. And of course, you know, that's, they've made millions and millions of dollars based on the one decision to let them use a DB5.
Well, and the DB5, the Bond DB5 made, went, took a road trip all over the US and Canada, and, Prince Andrew, I think, was given a small scale replica of it that was battery operated that is still in existence and still works to this day, but I think it's in a museum now.
Oh, that's hilarious. Well, and I think what Prince Charles was actually relatively young when this movie came out.
Yeah.
So,
well, 64, I mean, of course.
Yeah. Well, anyway. So, yeah, I mean,
none of us were even born yet.
Well, no, not at all. Not at all. Not even a little bit. Yeah. Well, Shazam.
Eric was the closest at negative five.
Yeah, I was negative five. And this, you know, it's funny. The DB5 isn't even my style of car. I much preferred, of the cars in this movie, I much preferred the Mustang. But still, it's very iconic.
I would have preferred the Jaguar.
Yeah, it's...
just like Leonard.
Yeah, so we get Sean Connery making the moves on Jill Masterson, who is up in the suite helping Orrick Goldfinger cheat at Gin Rummy. And Bond comes in and does his Bond thing where he... Well, actually, but is it, it's before that that he meets with Leiter, right?
Right.
Where he's getting a massage by Dink.
Felix! Felix, how are you? Dink, meet Felix Leiter.
Hello.
Felix, say hello to Dink.
Hi, Dink.
Dink, say goodbye to Felix. Man talk.
And I don't want to sound like, you know, it's like anytime a female in a movie is not treated with the utmost respect is going to send me in a tailspin. It's just, you know, I understand that movies are made in a time and a place with certain sensibilities of the day. And I'm okay with that. And it'd be even more okay, you know, if the entire movie was done in a wink, wink fashion and, you know, you're meant to understand that Bond is God's gift to spies and women and all things in the world. But, this movie has such a profound lack of logic to it that it makes it really hard for me to give it the benefit of the doubt along the way at any point. So I think at when I was watching it to this point, I'm still like, okay with it. Like, oh, that's kind of funny. They'd never be able to get away with that now. But, you know, looking back on it, now knowing how I feel about the movie in its totality, it's just another opportunity for me to roll my eyes.
So do you think that if the movie had had a better plot line and some better fleshing out of the story that made more sense, it would have been better able to kind of camouflage the misogyny in a way you could have tolerated?
Absolutely. All right. If it just stuck to a coherent tone, I would have been okay with it.
And I totally agree with you. I can totally see that.
Okay. So, next, of course, like I said, Bond, interrupts the cheating at cards and, ends up betting the, Jill Masterson, Shirley Eaton. And then he is, attacked by Oddjob in the kitchen and wakes up to find, the woman he's just bedded, dead in the room, murdered, being covered in gold paint. And she dies of epidermal suffocation.
So if you were playing cards and you had somebody helping you cheat and suddenly they stopped helping you cheat, mightn't you go and find out what was wrong with them?
Yeah, there's that. But you send your henchmen, right?
Yeah, but certainly, certainly not long enough for James Bond to, you know, get his DB5 out of the garage.
Well, nobody cares about the women in this movie. I mean, nobody's actually running to anybody's aid.
No, and the part that I didn't understand and still don't is why they didn't kill Bond.
Well, oh yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing, is that...
It makes no sense.
Yeah, they don't kill Bond several times in this movie where they should have.
And it's never explained why.
Yeah.
They try at one point. It still doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, no, that is true. But so we meet Oddjob, who never speaks. In the book, it's because he has a cleft palate and is shy about speaking or can't speak very well. Much like Ralph Fiennes in Red Dragon. Well, or like...
I prefer Tom Noonan.
Yeah, Tom Noonan, yes, in Manhunter.
Or the television show, which does an amazing job with the Red Dragon storyline.
Okay, well, I have not gotten there yet, so...
It's my favorite.
Okay. Anyway, so Bond calls Felix and says, ooh, we got a problem. Get here immediately. So then we move to London, and Bond now gets his mission, which is to figure out how Goldfinger is smuggling gold internationally. And by the way, this is actually a thing. When I'm doing research for this, there's a bunch of stuff in the book that sort of explains this. When all the currencies were actually tied to gold, this was a much bigger deal. And for instance, if the price of gold, which was set by the government, like if in the UK government, if the price of gold is so many pounds per ounce, you were not able to actually own your own gold or sell gold to like a foreign government. And if you do like sell gold basically to the government, you're going to get the government mandated price. You can't sell it for any kind of profit. That's the whole point.
That would have been an extraordinarily helpful explanation, because I had no idea why they were upset about what he was doing. Because the way it was described is he was moving his gold to other markets to make more money on it, which sounds fine.
Exactly. Yeah, that just sounds like capitalism. But no, that was highly illegal. He was actually smuggling gold, out of a national currency, which destabilizes the currency. So it's a problem, but it's a much bigger problem that can be tackled in a corny, campy movie. So I appreciate that you dislike it for that reason.
Yeah. Just a couple more lines to explain it. I mean, I don't know. This also may be an anachronism. I mean, is that a nuance that would have been well known about the gold market back in 1964?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because we didn't go off the gold standard until, what, 72 or something in the United States?
Yeah, something that's late 70s, early 80s.
Yeah. So, yeah. Now our currency is just plain made up. So... if there is any anchor to it, I'm not sophisticated enough to know what it is. But it's certainly not set to anything like a standard, like gold.
Yeah.
It's based on confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. That's why you hear politicians talking about they want to go back to the gold standard.
Yeah. Which would be highly impractical now. The idea being there's a finite amount of gold, and so therefore you have to have a physical piece of gold in Fort Knox to match with every piece of, like, every banknote that you print. Like, theoretically, you can exchange all of your banknotes for the gold that is sitting in Fort Knox. Unless, of course, that gold is either A, stolen, like in the book, or B, irradiated so that you cannot use it for 100 or 1,000 years or whatever. Because that was the point of this, was Goldfinger's plan was to, well, murder 60,000 people, but also to basically destroy the Fort Knox gold supply and destabilize the entire country's and the world economy.
Which would also increase the value of gold overall and make him immensely richer.
Yes, yes. And this is a movie that doesn't, even though apparently there's some sort of mention that he may be wearing a Spectre ring during his gin rummy playing, the name Spectre is never mentioned, and it kind of assumes that Goldfinger is kind of above Spectre, like he just plays at a level above them anyway. He's even richer than they are. He doesn't need a cabal. He's got himself.
That was actually one of my favorite parts of the movie, by the way. You know, after he lays out this ridiculous plan to steal all the gold out of Fort Knox. And then a couple minutes later, he's like, oh yeah, I'm not actually going to steal it. I'm going to do this. Which I thought was a very clever twist.
Yeah, so they actually insinuate Bond. By the way, Bond is the worst secret agent. He's not a secret agent. He's a special agent. Everybody knows who Bond is.
Everybody. Yeah, there's no secret about James Bond.
No. So Bond comes in and they have a high-stakes golf game. Because, by the way, Ian Fleming liked gambling, as you could tell. And so they use some minutia of golf rules, which I thought was sort of silly, to catch Goldfinger cheating.
Actually, Bond cheated.
Well, Bond... but he was cheating too. Because Oddjob threw that second ball in there to make a better lie.
Yeah.
And then Bond, you know, replaced it with the original. Yeah, everybody was cheating. Bond is kind of a jerk, by the way. Actually, turns out, I think Sean Connery is kind of a jerk. But, like, even when Bond and M were having the dinner with who I can't remember who, and Bond was talking about the brandy, Bond is kind of a dick in front of his boss.
Yes, he is. But he can get away with it because he is so good at what he does and so panty-droppingly handsome that everybody forgives him.
That's the worst thing that you've said ever.
I've said worse.
I just don't like that word, I guess. The two worst words in the English language, moist panties.
Really depends on time and place.
Anyway, so, aside from moist panties, instead we have Nazi gold. And Bond is going to play for a Nazi gold bar of gold with Goldfinger in this golf game. And then he beats Goldfinger, and Goldfinger gets really pissed and says, "The next time I see you will be never. I'm taking my ball and going home." By the way, do you know the history of why this character was named Goldfinger?
You left out the part where Oddjob decapitated a statue with his hat.
Yeah, Oddjob gets to throw his hat, which is funny because for some reason, I always thought that somehow Oddjob was also tied to Hervé Villechaize, but evidently not. Yeah, I don't know why. This is the first time I've ever seen this movie. So
me too.
Yeah. So, you know, and of course I'd seen allusions to it all over the place. And, you know, that's part of why watching this movie is that, you know, everybody has parodied or lampooned this scene and all sorts of stuff. Then, so Bond has to figure out how Goldfinger has to track Goldfinger. And this is where we also meet Q Branch, and we get to see this is the heavy gadgetry. This is where we see the DB5 with all the cool stuff, like all the Bond things that I can't remember which podcast may have actually just been the James Bonding podcast that talks about every single thing in the DB5 in this movie was just purely in the video game Spy Hunter.
I love that.
I loved Spy Hunter.
Oh, everybody loves Spy Hunter.
I love Spy Hunter, and I loved all the gadgets in this movie. It's just a shame that they were used so ineffectively.
Well,
I actually have two Spy Hunter games for my Xbox.
Oh, sweet. So, so Bond has to use all this gadgetry, including the best TomTom ever, to try to track Goldfinger. And so he's got his sat nav in his car. And so it was funny. He's driving around, what, Italy or Spain? Or where was that he was driving around?
Switzerland.
Switzerland. So yeah, there you go. The mountains of Switzerland. So that was kind of fun. Good to see good scenery there. And then Jill Masterson, the girl painted in gold, her sister shows up as an assassin, but not really, just a lady with a rifle. Because she's not actually skilled in anything, right? She's just vengeful.
I have no idea why this character is in the movie.
She's got a very different... Well, a couple of characters in this movie have very different flavors in the book, I understand. And she is one of them. Tilly Masterson, Jill's sister.
I hope so, because the only reason I could see that she would be in this movie is that she would provide some emotional motivation for Bond to really get Goldfinger after Tilly is killed by Oddjob. But at the same time, Bond doesn't even really seem to give a shit.
No, no, because...
So it makes her character totally superfluous.
Yeah, yeah. Well, in the book, Tilly is a lesbian, and so therefore immune to Bond's advances. And there's actually like a sort of a love... it's not really like a love scene, but like a longing, because Tilly lives longer in the book than she does in the movie. She actually thinks that Pussy is going to save her, because of course Pussy is a lesbian. A much butcher lesbian in the book, but Oddjob kills her later, and James Bond is like, well, she don't like men anyway, so fuck her, or not, as the case may be. Ian Fleming had a problem with lesbians.
It sounds like it.
Yeah. So
because they were women who wouldn't sleep with him.
I guess I don't know what his personal relationship with lesbians were, but we knew that Bond could cure them of their lesbianism. Mm-hmm. He could lay away the gay.
I have questions about that later.
Yeah, well, yeah, that is a problematic scene, but we'll get to that momentarily. So then there's this fun car chase between Tilly and Bond that reminded me completely of Grease, where Bond's got the car with the can opener hubcaps.
It reminded me of when... You, Eric, and I were driving down DeBar in your old Accord. No, it was a Civic. A girl passed us, and you looked at her, and I think you fancied her. So you played a similar little cat and mouse game with her all the way down DeBar. I'm not sure if she even noticed.
Probably not. That was how effective I was. And yeah. Anyway.
You were the original stalker.
Yeah. Well, what can you do? But equally as successful as Bond in this case. Well, no, not really, actually. He caught up with her. He actually ran her off the road. And I think she struck her yes. head too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. You did not sabotage the girl.
No, no. Or cause her brain injury. But, yeah, so he runs Tilly off the road, drives her back to the garage, and eventually we find out that the way Goldfinger smuggles gold is by melting it down and making it into car parts that he drives and takes his car with him everywhere he goes. Again, knowing the fact that you can't legally trade in gold does make a difference in knowing what this is all about.
Yes, it does.
So... Bond figures this out, and then he overhears Goldfinger talking to a Mr. Ling, the Chinaman character, about Operation Grand Slam. And then, as he's leaving and sneaking into the hearing all this, he bumps into Tilly, who is there to kill Goldfinger still, and then they are alerted to the Keystone Cops of the Chinese. Who, no matter where they are, all wear the same goofy uniforms?
Yes, even when they're trying to be covert later on.
Yes, it's kind of absurd. But there's some fun little car chases involving some projection screens and that kind of thing.
Yeah, and it got all Spy Hunter'd out, you know? He used the smokescreen, he used the oil slick. The only major problem I had was the bulletproof screen. That boggled my mind, because when they stopped in the forest and he put up the screen, they didn't stay behind it.
Oh, no, that would be too easy.
He put it up and then they got out of the car. But luckily, apparently the screen had some sort of psychological effect on the people chasing him, because they all shot at the screen no matter where Bond or Tilly were.
Yeah. Well, and
it was great.
Tilly makes a break for it and Oddjob clocks her with the hat. Kills her, and she is done. That's it. Her character is out of there.
Yeah.
But Bond...
And why didn't they kill Bond here, either?
Yeah, well, that's the thing, and the fact that they strap Bond to a table, Spread Eagle with the industrial laser going to cut through a sheet of gold. I don't know why it had to cut through a sheet of gold. Maybe just because that's what Goldfinger has laying around.
Well, maybe that's just what he was getting ready for his next car part.
Yeah, so I thought that was fun as a piece of tech, I suppose.
Yeah, Ian Fleming really likes to torture Bond's nuts.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it's you know, live by the sword, die by the sword.
But this scene afforded Goldfinger probably one of the best lines in any Bond movie ever.
Or maybe any movie ever.
Do you expect me to talk?
No, Mr. Bond, I expect you to die.
Yeah, it's great, and it's delivered great, but it has no weight to it, because he doesn't mean it.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's the thing.
So, except for a few silly moments up to this point, I was still on board with the movie.
So really,
when he said that, I was like, oh, this is going to be great. How's Bond going to get out of this one?
And then he just talks his way out. And let me explain this part of the book, too. So, in this part of the book...
Wait, but before you explain the book, can you actually explain the movie? Because I can't.
Well, so, like, yeah.
What is the logic behind...
Well,
the
idea is
Goldfinger out of not killing him.
Yeah, the idea is I know about Operation Grand Slam, and Goldfinger's like, "Who cares? It doesn't matter. You've heard the name, you know." Well, but I've told everything I know. Well, you know nothing. It doesn't matter. Oh, but I know something. And then Mr. Ling says he might know something. Maybe we should keep him alive.
Yeah, I still don't understand why.
Yeah, well, anyway. So they decide to keep him alive. And basically, the rest of the movie, he is spent basically just not doing anything. So there is that problem. In the book, by the way, it's even worse. Goldfinger, because Tilly survives that original encounter with Oddjob, and she and Bond were captured together. And Goldfinger talks his way out of being... cut in half by a circular saw blade. So Goldfinger decides to make Bond and Tilly secretaries, like put them to work on the payroll. And they are working in the secretarial pool and traveling around with Goldfinger.
What?
Well, exactly. So, yeah. So this is where we have a little bit of problem.
Well, those were the days where you would bang your secretary.
I guess. Yeah. So.
Because that's all women are good for. Birth and babies.
Well,
wait, was Goldfinger sexually attracted to Bond?
I don't think so, but I don't know. It did not appear so.
That would at least be a reason he wouldn't kill Bond.
That's true. So apparently Goldfinger persuades or Bond persuades Goldfinger to keep him alive, and Goldfinger makes Bond tell MI6 that nothing wrong here, boss.
Does he do that in the movie?
Don't send reinforcements. I don't know. That's the idea, but
I don't think he does in the movie. Do you remember that, Jason?
He doesn't.
Oh. They're like, "Oh, we're going to keep you alive and put you in a cell."
Well,
so hopefully you can cause some mayhem later.
Well, they take Bond to a stud farm near Fort Knox, Kentucky, aboard his private jet flown by his personal pilot, played by the actress Honor Blackman, whose name is...
Pussy Galore.
Yes. Did you see what the original his original reaction was in the dialogue? The original script, in the movie, she says her name is Pussy Galore, and he says, "I must be dreaming." But the original script had him saying, "Oh, I know you are, but what's your name?"
Oh, God.
It was too saucy for the censors.
I was really hoping you were going to say the original line was, "I want to have your abortion."
But anyway, so again, I'm going to contrast the book a little bit. In the book, Pussy Galore isn't even a pilot. She's instead one of the mafioso that meet up with Goldfinger at his stud farm complex, and she is the leader of like some kind of crazy like garbage truck gang. Like literally, she is a dark haired kind of like pug nose Rhea Perlman kind of lesbian who's the leader of a bunch of truck driving lesbians. Instead of being a
fairy. Her whole crew were lesbians too?
Yes. Well, her whole crew in the movie are here too. She's a lesbian, and all of her flying circus ladies are lesbians, aren't they?
I didn't get that was ever established.
Well, maybe not, but yes, they were certainly loyal to her. And all sort of carbon copies of her in one sense or another. Or maybe she just hired who she liked.
I totally didn't get the lesbian connection, so.
You didn't get that Pussy Galore was a lesbian?
No.
That Bond had to rape the lesbian out of her?
Nope.
Nope, I didn't get that.
Get out of town.
Nope.
She tells him, I'm not playing for your team. I am immune to your charms, you stupid man. And I am a pilot, so therefore I am capable, and I don't need to, I'm basically... as manly as any man around here.
Not playing for your team in the 60s could have meant any multitude of things, and I wouldn't have leapt to lesbianism.
Well, it is explicit in the book that she's a lesbian.
Yeah. See, I didn't get that in the movie.
Yeah, I didn't either. I just got that she was fiercely independent, had no ethical connection to either Bond or Goldfinger, and just simply wanted to make some money so she could go off and do her own thing.
That is called lesbianism.
Because he was a strong woman that didn't need a man to color her world?
In 1964, that's
called feminism, I think.
Well, remember that word didn't exist in 1964, except on lesbian campuses of college. Yeah. No, by the way, I am not in any way opposed to lesbianism or anything. I'm just pointing out that this was explicit in this movie.
Okay.
Yeah. As written. Except that Bond, that's how he proves his manhood, is he, and he full-on rapes her. It's not even kidding around here. It actually was super uncomfortable to watch. Because it wasn't like they were just sort of playing with the judo thing in the hay. He actually like forces himself on top of her, like gets in between her legs, and as she is still saying no, like is beginning his penetration process.
Yeah. You know, I had so many problems with this. My biggest problem was somehow, I guess by the power of his cock, he got her to switch sides.
Yes.
Not those kinds of sides, Eric, but
both
actually, actually come over to the side of MI6 and help stop Goldfinger. And when later on he's asked how he convinced her to switch sides, he says, and I didn't understand this at all. He says, "I appeal to her maternal instinct." What does that mean? Is that some sort of entendre about how he violated her birth canal?
I think so, yes.
That's horrible.
It is horrible. No, it is all kinds of horrible.
Yeah. That alone would make this movie irredeemable.
Yeah. Well, again, that is a problem. by the way, in trivia, Gert Frobe or whatever, I don't know how you pronounce his name. Jason, do you have any ideas on how Goldfinger's actor's name is pronounced?
It would be Gert Frobe.
Okay. Well, Gert...
I think it's actually Gert Frobe. I think it's an O umlaut in there, but let me look. Let me look at his actual name. It's Frobe.
Okay, well.
Gert Frobe. If it's German.
Yeah, no, it's German. Yeah. Okay. Not only is it German, he had kind of a problem with the scene with the mafiosos and the nerve gas because as a member of the Nazi party during World War II, he didn't like the idea of being the bad guy in a movie that kills a bunch of people with poison gas.
Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this mafioso scene, because it didn't make any sense to me.
Well, yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it would have been great, except that he ends up killing all of them.
Yeah, there's so many things. There are so many things about this scene. So, he has spent a lot of money on this caper of his. And I think, you know, getting all the pieces, parts that he needs from around the world. And he's contracted through all these mafiosos. But I think the most amount of money he spent was for the elaborate pitch that he gives that involves hydraulics all throughout the room. This must have been like a $4 million room just so he could demonstrate what he was actually not going to do.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had
seemingly models. So he could talk all the mafia guys into backing his plan, except that he was just going to kill them anyway.
Yeah, that is a problem. Now, did he kill them on purpose or did he kill them by accident?
I read it as on purpose.
Yeah, me too.
Because Bond tells him later that the gas is actually deadly, and he's like, I know.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so now what did he gain by killing all of them? Because I know what he gained by killing the one guy who was uncomfortable with the deal. That's a straight-up mafia movie move.
Right.
Yeah. And
I also didn't understand the elaborate ruse necessary to do it if he's just going to kill everybody.
Well, that's true.
Why not just kill everybody? Why even have a sales pitch? Why not just be like, hey, come get your money. Oh, by the way, I'm going to lock the doors and gas you to death.
Well, he did get to run around the room, the portly man running around the room, hitting the hydraulics to show movies and see scale models and stuff.
Yeah. I mean, this, for someone who said, I just expect you to die. He took every opportunity to do the stereotypical bad guy monologuing.
That's somebody true. Somebody had a large production budget they needed to spend.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, you know, I agree. I don't really get what the idea, unless this was the first time he was like knew that the nerve gas was going to kill them all.
Maybe. I don't know. This
maybe. It was a trial run of the batch.
Yeah, this plot point was so stupid. I think it actually lowered my IQ watching it.
Well, so then we find out that Bond, of course, is recaptured by Pussy after he gets to see all of the plan. And he learns that Goldfinger is not going to steal the gold. He is instead going to contaminate the gold, which will render it useless for 58 years. A very specific time frame.
Very clever. That's a very clever twist.
Yes. So this will increase the value of Goldfinger's gold and give the Chinese an advantage from the economic chaos. So that's why everybody's on board. And as it turns out, if somebody alerts the authorities while he is en route to Fort Knox, he can just detonate the bomb right in Kentucky, and if nothing else, just nuke the gold that way. Or in any major
city. Or even, yeah.
Yeah.
Or even send it back to England.
Exactly, yeah. So, this is where part of the Operation Grand Slam is where we have Pussy Galore's Flying Circus. Pussy Galore is an expert pilot and is the leader of an acrobatic plane team. And they have the canisters of the deadly gas, and they're going to fly over Fort Knox. And, as stated, kill everyone.
Yeah, I think you mentioned before they estimated it to be 60,000 people.
Yes. And you get actually really good scenes of them flying over what is purported to be Fort Knox and a bunch of soldiers just falling down instantly.
I was really glad they were faking because it looked really fake.
Yeah, it was super fake. But yeah, then that's, by the way, the problem. But we're going to get there in a second. So then we have Goldfinger's men driving in, a surprisingly small number of men, and they are all in Chinese military uniforms, kung fu outfits or whatever.
Which is just how you would want to totally outfit your invasion force.
Well, yeah. Yeah. So they go in there and they break into Fort Knox and they deliver this atomic device and they handcuff Bond to the device so that Bond can die in the whole thing. By the way, they leave Oddjob in Fort Knox. They seal him in. Oddjob is taking one for the team.
I have another question. Why didn't they just kill Bond here?
Exactly, yeah. Yeah, which they could have. No reason. It didn't have to look like an accident. They are detonating a nuclear device.
I love this device so much. First of all, I can forgive comedically obsolete looking technology. But this bomb looked like it was a hot dog cart. But the best part was the sound that the bomb made, so that you knew they really meant business. It was the same sound that our Atari would make when we didn't get the cartridge in right. Oh, I loved it so much.
So, turns out, as they're inside and there's these shenanigans with the bomb and it's counting down, and Bond's got to get free of the handcuffs and stop the bomb and defeat Oddjob. But outside, apparently the entire army base was faking because since Bond converted Pussy to the light side, there is no poison gas, or there's some inert gas or something. And so everybody's just faking it. Now, here's where
It would have been really funny if she'd switched out for helium.
It would have been really funny if she'd switched out for helium.
Well, okay, here's a problem that's sort of fun, is that, you know, all the dubbing that they did with Goethe Frobe, whatever, Le Chiffre, what they didn't do, and it turns out he is... they are confronted by the United States Army, and there's a battle there. Well, Goldfinger takes off his gold suit or whatever, and underneath he is wearing a United States Army suit, and the only thing that gives him away, of course, is the golden gun and his heavy, heavy German accent.
Each one of them shows the girl. I'll get her. You get the door open.
He's like, Achtung, they went to end that way. I can't even do the accent. But
no, that was good.
It is horrible. Horrible. So Goldfinger ends up being a traitor to the Chinese because he's only out for himself. And Bond, through this incredible Bondness, has a fight with Oddjob and manages to defeat Oddjob, even though he is clearly outmanned. And he defeats the atomic device, or at least stalls it while, or, you know, well, I guess what did he do? He didn't really do anything. Some guy came in and helped him.
Well, he's comedically ineptly trying to smash open the lock with two bricks of gold against a lock, which seems like the most ineffective way to get anything open.
Well, the nice thing about Fort Knox is they do have bars of gold just lying out once you get inside.
Yeah, gold is way too soft to cause any damage to a strong lock.
Yeah, that's the point. I mean, you just make dents in the gold.
I'm going to defer to your metallurgical knowledge.
No, that's why gold has to be alloyed with other metals to make jewelry. Otherwise, it would just destroy it.
I like the fact that they decided at the last minute to have the clock stop at 007. Or actually, it wasn't. In the original movie, it stopped at 003. And it was only the re-release where they have it stop at 007. But they didn't change the dialogue.
The DVD I got from Netflix had it stopping at 003.
Okay, well, that's good, because mine stopped at 007.
Oh, that's funny.
But yet in dialogue, he says, it was three ticks from being whatever. So, crazy. But luckily, Bond saves the day, saves the gold depository, and he is invited to meet with the president at the White House. But Goldfinger has hijacked his jet, or the plane that's taking him to the White House.
But it turns out it's not a jet. It's actually a shuttle in outer space, right?
Oh, you think the depressurization thing wouldn't do the trick?
No, I do not.
Now, did Mythbusters bust that myth too? I mean, I know they did the gold paint thing. And by the way, the gold paint thing, that was like Goldfinger's fetish in the book. He painted all the women gold that he had sex with.
Hmm. Well, you know, everybody's got their thing.
I think in the book also, Oddjob gets sucked out from depressurization, and Bond just straight up strangles Goldfinger.
I wouldn't have a problem with Goldfinger getting sucked out into the atmosphere if it wasn't through a super tiny window.
Okay, well, that is a problem.
Especially because he was a huge dude.
Yeah. Like if the door had been ripped off and he went flying out, that's fine. He's good.
He clearly had his share of strudel.
Yeah. So dumb.
And then, of course, the plane is out of control. And that I think that's just a special effects in 1964 causes that to be a crazy scene, the last scene of the plane.
And the most absurd but yet strangely accurate radar.
And then, of course, at the end, of course, Bond, like, gets the girl. He's going to lay a little more pipe there and not be discovered right away.
Typical Bond ending, right?
Yeah. Okay, so did you hear about how Goldfinger was named? Like, actually, the novel itself, the bad guy being Goldfinger, was based on an actual architect named Goldfinger, who is notorious. He actually designed a bunch of the tower blocks in London, because after the bombing of London in World War II, they just, you know, they had a bunch of bombed buildings and stuff, so they needed to have fresh designs, and they decided to build, like, big tower blocks, which turns out are fairly ugly. It's basically like building like projects, but they thought it would be more efficient instead of just little houses. So this guy named Goldfinger was one of the architects who designed a bunch of buildings in London. And I think maybe he and Fleming, like, he was trying to either buy some property or prevent some property from being sold in, like, Fleming's neighborhood. So there was already, like, a problem there. So he named the guy, the bad guy. Oh, and the guy had, it was notoriously, had a lack of sense of humor. Like, if his people working under him were jokesters or funny in the least bit, he would just fire them because he did not have any humor. So Fleming named the bad guy Goldfinger, and the real Goldfinger sued him. And they ended up, and of course Fleming's response was, oh, that's fine, no problem, I'll just change the name. We'll change his name to Gold Prick. So they continued the lawsuit because they didn't think that was appropriate. And eventually, though, they settled out of court, where the publishing house paid for the real Goldfinger's court fees, and then the actual compensation given to him was 6 free copies of the novel.
Nicely wow. done.
Yeah, this is how rich people play games and lawyers get rich. Oh, by the way, Frobe was, he may have been a member of the Nazi party, but he was credited for hiding and saving a Jewish mother and son during the Nazi period, so he wasn't a bad guy. He was just, you know, caught up in turbulent times.
He wasn't a Nazi's Nazi.
Yeah. Yeah. He was a member of the party because you kind of had to be. But,
well, yeah. Because at one point, everybody in Germany was a Nazi because it was that or you were put to death.
Any trivia? Any fun facts? Anything else to add to, well, obviously your favorite Bond movie so far, Drew?
Yeah. It's right up there. Jason, where do you rank this Bond movie? Is it the worst one?
No, it's not the worst one. You're in for a treat yet.
Oh, do you think Thunderball is worse?
Nope.
Oh, okay. All right. Oh,
the Lazenby one?
I know, yes. Yeah. Okay. Oh, people love that one, though.
And maybe on a rewatch, you know, it may get elevated because I had forgotten, because I don't rotate all of them equally. And I may not have watched this one as much because when I watched it, it was pretty bad. And I don't remember it being this bad before. So I'm wondering if just having rewatched all of them, it kind of falls apart in comparison. So it'll be interesting as we progress through the rest of them if I still hate On Her Majesty's Secret Service as much. Although maybe in retrospect, I don't hate the movie as much as I just hate George Lazenby.
By the way, do you know what Ian Fleming also wrote famously?
No.
Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Really?
Yes.
That seems impossible. He must have stolen it.
No. Well, you know, I mean, he himself was a weirdo. I mean, he lived, he had a Jamaican estate called the Goldeneye. He fancied himself quite a celebrity.
And well, he came from an affluent family.
Apparently, yeah.
And then kind of muddled his way through military service by the Peter principle.
Let's see. Honor Blackman, Pussy Galore, was the oldest Bond girl until this latest movie, Spectre. She was 39. Monica Bellucci is 50. Now, have you heard Shirley Bassey's theme song that I guess was originally going to be for Thunderball, but called Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang?
No.
Okay.
No.
It's very similar to Goldfinger in the lyrical stylings, let's say.
He's tall and he's dark, and like a shark, he looks for trouble. That's why the zero's double, Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He's suave and he's smooth, and he can soothe you like vanilla. The gentleman's a killer, Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. Demoiselles in danger have filled the stranger's past. Like a knife, he cuts through life, like every day's the last. He's fast and he's cool, he's from the school that loves and leaves them. A pity if it grieves them, Mr. Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
It's almost like Dylan-esque.
I gotta think, my favorite Bond theme song, The World Is Not Enough, is probably my favorite one.
Who sings that?
Shirley Munson from Garbage.
Well, okay, hold on. Hold on.
By the way, she is in the second season of Terminator Sarah Connor Chronicles.
Very nice.
Oh, excellent. Well, okay, hold on. What about Live and Let Die? What about...
Live and Let Die is not bad.
What about Nobody Does It Better?
No.
I can't remember the name, but I actually quite like the Chris Cornell one. Might have been from Quantum of Solace. Is that right?
I like Skyfall.
Yeah, Skyfall's really
Skyfall's
good.
Skyfall's okay. Yeah.
Yeah, so we'll have to compare as coming up, because there'll be some fun ones coming up. And there's, you know, Guy Hamilton, I think, is the director in this one, and he directs a bunch of the next movies in a row, so.
And Quantum of Solace was...
That wasn't the Jack White one, was it?
Yes, it
was. Oh, my God. That was
horrible. Quantum of Solace was Jack White. The Casino Royale was Chris Cornell.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, okay.
Okay, well, I agree then. The Chris Cornell one was much better than the Jack White one.
Because the Chris Cornell had to open with all the poker cards and the great kind of cartoon cinematics. And Quantum of Solace was just a flaming pile of crap.
Well, okay, hold on. I'm gonna defend.
I don't think the movie's that bad.
Yeah, I don't think the movie, compared to this movie, for instance, I think it's great, and it has a very tough woman character, which I really like, who is not portrayed as a lesbian, even though she's not romantically involved with Bond.
True, very true.
So, yeah.
By the way, another reason the new Star Wars movies is awesome
is because of the strong female lead. Or not lead, but
she's the lead, and she rocks. She kicks ass.
Cool. You know, they tried to bury her toys. I just
you need to rephrase that.
Oh, I know. It's so maddening. Yeah. Somehow executives thought. I can't even say it. I don't want to spoil anything.
No. They thought that the boys wouldn't buy merchandise that starred a female character.
Yeah, so they centered all their marketing around the villain. Like, oh, the bad guy who does reprehensible things in the movie. this is a way better option than the kick-ass female lead.
It's funny that the number of male gamer dudes I know that always play female characters.
Well, sometimes they're more interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know if I was... I guess if I was playing with a group of other people... I wouldn't necessarily play a female character. But if I'm playing like a solo game, like Fallout or something, I guess it just gives you a different experience. Because it's not like I'm not really identifying with the character as much as I am, you know, like going through the story. Does that make sense?
Yes.
I don't dress up like the character or anything. I'm not a weirdo. I know what you're saying, but I'm just fine. I'm going to have to change all of my characters now back to men. That's how boring. How pedestrian. So, okay, so anything else about Goldfinger? Wow, I didn't expect you guys to hate this movie so much.
No, yeah, good. Well, it's awful. I don't know what you expected.
And Jason doesn't even defend it either. That's amazing to me.
Well, I mean, there's no way to defend it. I mean, it was clearly a movie made in a different time, so there's the defense of it. But it's still kind of indefensible because it was just terrible. It wasn't redemptive enough in the rest of the story, and the story fell apart. So, I mean, I agree with Drew in that respect that, like I said, if the story had been more cohesive and compelling, then some of it would be a little more forgivable, but it clearly doesn't transcend the passage of time.
So, so it'll be interesting to see Thunderbolt next.
Thunderball?
Oh, I'm sorry, Thunderball. Thunderbolt and Lightfoot, is that who I'm... Thunderlips, Rocky III. Anyway.
Did you hit your head?
Not hard enough. Not hard enough.
The great thing about watching Goldfinger this week is it's going to make one of the most amazing movies in cinema history look even better when we talk about it next week.
Because next week is Roadhouse.
Ah, oh, so looking forward to that.
It'll be interesting to look at it with not in a creepy way eyes. Because, looking at it critically could be, I don't know, it'll be interesting.
You shut your mouth. It's got Patrick Swayze. And Jeff Healey.
No, I know. No. It's got Sam Elliott. Yeah, exactly. Oh, and Ben Gazzara.
And a stuffed bear. Yeah, it's a great movie. It's one of my favorites. I really dig. It's being remade, of course.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Pain don't hurt.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's why would you remake the movie? It's silly. Okay, so may I do my segment, 6 Degrees of 2001?
Yes.
Let's hear it.
Okay. Lois Maxwell is the ever-present and ever-lovely Moneypenny in Goldfinger. She is also Nurse Mary Lore in Lolita, directed by Stanley Kubrick, who also directed 2001: A Space Odyssey.
But that's not 6 degrees. That's like 2 degrees.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah. No, it's, well done. It's easy, yeah. This one is well easy. Done. Other ones are going to be more difficult. The movie Once took me a little bit. Let me just point that out.
So you are... So you really took to this assignment.
I love this assignment. Yeah. I dig it a lot. You're welcome. To vary it up too, because there are some Kubrick movies, like, you can connect a lot more people probably through Eyes Wide Shut than through, say, Barry Lyndon.
So Brother Drew, have you seen Eyes Wide Shut?
Yes.
And opinions?
I thought it was a mess. I thought it was uncomfortable to sit through. I thought the scenes between Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman were so awkward that I didn't even want to watch it. And the sexy parts weren't all that erotic even, so you couldn't even enjoy it from from an aspect of just being purely titillated. Just the weird thing with Lily Sobieski, which just creeped me out.
Oh, as a father of girls, it's even creepier now.
Yeah, and if you tell me like the whole thing is just a dream, then I'm just like, to quote Heat, don't waste my motherfucking time.
Well, let me remind you of the soundtrack. Dong, 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 dong. Dung.
Yeah. Thanks to Christopher Nolan, that is pretty much the soundtrack of every movie trailer now.
Freaking Christopher Nolan.
Oh, another comment about seeing Star Wars is it made me realize that people of my generation are now in very important decision-making positions in the world of entertainment, because they were like 5 movie trailers in a row, which 8-year-old Drew was just getting all giddy about. There's like the Captain America, there was a Suicide Squad, there was the Batman Superman movie, there was a fun spy movie. I don't even remember what it was, but I was like, oh, these are all the movies that I would have wanted to go see as a kid, and still want to go see. The Captain America trailer looked amazing.
Is there any hope for the Batman Superman movie?
I don't think so. I do not think so.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Brother Jay, do you care about Batman Superman? Batman Superman Zuckerberg.
See, my problem is that I've never been. The movies, I've never seen any of the Batman movies. And I'm a huge Batman fan from the comic books. I'm a huge Batman fan from the cartoons, but the movies, I just they never hit me.
You never saw The Dark Knight?
Now, I will say part of the reason is because there were horror stories from working at the movie theater when Batman was playing at university. So that may have been a big factor.
Oh, what kind of horror stories?
Well, that they would have to come in at 9 a.m. to start popping the popcorn. And
oh, okay.
And
it was just so much of a thing.
They couldn't turn over the theaters fast enough, and people were terrible and ugly, and so that was the metric that they gauged all of their movies against forever. It's because it made them the most money that they'd ever made in the summer. So
that was one of the first movies that I remember. It was like on like six different screens at once,
and in 70mm, I believe.
Good times. Yeah. Good times. Who would think Michael Keaton? Crazy.
Mr. Mom. He was good. Gung Ho. He was good.
No, he was fine. Yeah, he was. Yeah, yeah. Turns out he's pretty good in things.
These are not ribbons of honor. These are ribbons of shame.
Is that from Gung Ho? Is that
from Gung Ho?
That's from Gung Ho.
Literally, the only thing I remember from Gung Ho is, oh, how did that slide get in there? When he's doing the presentation about his factory to the Japanese, and he has a picture of the girl looking down her shirt.
I do not remember that.
I think the three of us saw that in a theater together.
Oh, I know. We must have. Yeah, absolutely. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.